Living like a hobo on the streets with nothing but a sleeping bag and maybe a dog.
Really?
Just kidding.
You're listening to Mind Brew Chats, bringing you honest conversations about mental health, well-being, and life from Kuching, Sarawak. In this episode, we'll be talking about how the practice of minimalism can help you clear your headspace and positively impact your mental health. Joining us today are two friends, Georgette and Rafe. This episode will be split into segments of roughly 40 minutes each for easier listening. Grab your favorite brew, sit back, and join us now. Hello everyone, welcome back to Mind Brew Chats. We've been on a break for a few months, but we are back with a brand new episode. I'm Laura, I'll be hosting today's episode, and we will be talking about minimalism and mental health. Now, minimalism can evoke a very strong reaction from people, and I don't mean a positive one, because for those who say, I could never be a minimalist. What comes to their mind is this person who wears the same thing every day, who lives in a bare house, who never buys anything. It's either that or minimalism as a design aesthetic. You know what I'm talking about. The images are all over social media. You have this beautiful interiors with Scandinavian furniture and a Muji theme. Very beautiful, very simple design aesthetic. And that's all most people ever see minimalism as. The absence of things and quote-unquote a millennial fade. I don't consider myself a minimalist, but I am interested in any philosophy or any lifestyle that could be beneficial for our mental health and well-being. I believe that minimalism is so much more than the absence of things. And to help me explore the depth and extent of the minimalism lifestyle today are two friends. Georgette. Hi, Georgette.
Hi, Laura.
And Raven.
Hello.
Georgette does a lot of things, including, but not limited to, studying the tarot, making people use bullet journals, collaborative story writing, poetry, and podcasting. A former journalist, she is now a pen for hire living in Kuching. Raven studied psychology in Melbourne, but fell in love with coffee instead. He now runs a specialty coffee business in Kuching. Does a fair bit of photography, illustration, and design for his business and as a hobby, and sometimes teaches private coffee lessons as well. Now, I found out about minimalism in an almost cliched way. I watched this documentary on Netflix. It was called Minimalism, and it was by these two guys called Josh Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. They were the minimalists. At the time, I was not in a very good headspace, and it attracted me, that idea of being able to practice this philosophy or this lifestyle and clear out some of my internal clutter by first clearing out my physical clutter, a lot of which were things that I held onto, because they had this sentimental value attached to them, memories that I wasn't ready to let go yet. And ever since then, I have been interested in learning more and reading more about minimalism. Now, I'm interested in how the two of you first heard of minimalism, and when was this exactly?
I actually came across minimalism probably back in the early 2000s. I followed a lot of blogs back then. So I came across a blog called Zen Habits. And later on, I came across another blog called Becoming Minimalist. they have very interesting concepts that I have not heard of previously. And growing up as a child that's been told to keep everything just in case, it's I rarely question the just in case defense because it made some kind of sense. But what didn't make any sense is that my, you know, I have things everywhere. There's just piles and piles of things everywhere. So when I came across minimalism, it just got me thinking about what the heck I was doing with my life.
What about you, Raven?
I'm not sure if I can call myself a minimalist, but I was taken by the idea when I was finding inspiration for my cafe's design 8 years ago. I really like some of the minimalistic designs I've seen with simple colors, you know, very clean cut structures, like this art deco to it. And I remember seeing a neon light sign that reads "less is more" in the cafe. So I think the idea slowly grew on me and has been influencing me in both my professional and personal decisions since then.
What I'm hearing from Georgette is she discovered an entirely new concept to her, and it was linked to stuff. What did minimalism actually mean to you at the time, Georgette?
Well, you know, what I learned back then basically was just getting rid of things that doesn't serve my life right at that point. And the best place to check is probably, you know, the box that you've been hiding under your bed for the last 10 years. Getting rid of that is probably the first step in embracing the minimalist life, because sometimes we just have things and they're just there for no good reason. So minimalism is, you know, getting me to start thinking about things like that.
I think we've all have that box of shame that we just cannot get rid of. Mm-hmm. What about you, Rim? What did minimalism mean to you at the time?
Living like a hobo on the street with nothing but a sleeping bag and maybe a dog.
Really?
Just kidding. But actually, the concept, I mean, like I said, the first time when I came across the concept, I thought it was more like aesthetics. You know, it was more like a sense of art, interior design and things like that. But I watched the same movie you did mention earlier on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my takeaway was basically about more or less about owning things down to the bare minimum, like only the essential things that we need and love, and not to be cluttered by objects that we used to think we absolutely need. And then they just end up somewhere collecting dust.
So it seems like at that point in time, for both of you, it was still very much about stuff, about living with less. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, apart from the, you know, the artistic sense that came along with the concept, that was basically that attracted me to the idea, you know, and the word minimalist was quite hip, I think, at that time. But I do find a lot of these minimalistic art and design visually pleasing. So it did become a drive behind for me to sort of wanting to find out more about it.
In that 8 to 10 years since both of you discovered minimalism, what has changed? What does minimalism mean to you now?
It's mostly the same thing, but there is a lot of other things you have to take into consideration, because there's a lot of people who are trying to push their brand of minimalism. And, you know, you probably know who they are. You can just take a look at Netflix or, you know, whatever's trendy right now. And they all have, you know, something to sell you. For some people, not being able to practice 100% is not acceptable.
Mm.
I've been in certain Facebook groups where people go, oh, but there's this one thing that this minimalist person said that we have to do this, but I can't do this. So does that make me a failure? And sometimes you see people come after them for that. Like, oh, if you can't do that, it means that you're not a minimalist. So this is a really terrible mindset to have, because it's you're not a failure for trying. And we all come from different places. We, you know, we in Asia, we may not be able to practice minimalism the same way a privileged white person in America does. So, you know, I think the important thing is being able to sort out what works for you and what works in the context of where your life is now, than trying to, you know, do that, try to fit into a mold that somebody else made for you.
I fully agree with that. The comment section is the cesspool of humanity. That's what people say, right? And yeah, people are very quick to attack. Or you, if you don't do this, if you still own a lot of stuff, you still buy things, it means you're not a minimalist.
You own more than 30 books.
That's absolute rubbish. And it puts so much unnecessary pressure on people. And that's one of the things that we're hoping to dispel this episode today. I think that people need to understand that when you talk about minimalism, it's not a one-size-fit-all. It's not a prescriptive formula. And everyone needs to adapt to it, adapt it to a way that fits their life and their values. I thought it was interesting also that when I was doing research on minimalism for this episode, one question that came up was, is minimalism bad for you? And I think you just kind of perfectly answer that question. Here we are extolling the virtues of minimalism, but can it be bad for you? Like most things in life, if you take it too far, if you become super obsessed with removing everything from your life or sticking to a formula, like you can't own more than 30 books, you can't own more than 20 pieces of clothing, it affects your health or your relationship with people that you care about, then yes, it can be bad for you. What do you think? Have you had a similar experience of a transition of what you thought minimalism was and what it is now to you?
Well, first of all, like for the question, is minimalism bad for you? I think we really have to come back to the definition of what minimalism is. Because for some people, it might be, you know, a strict sort of religion-like sort of ideology. And therefore, they have all these rules or sins even for owning more than 30 books, for example. But then it's not really a very... It's a relevant new term, right? And then I think people can sort of take away different things from it. Like I said, when I first came across it, I was more attracted to the concept as a form of art or art deco in a cafe setting. But obviously you have, on another level, the lifestyle that comes along with it, the methodology that you can learn from the books that these people are trying to sell you. And behind, you know, above all of this, there is the big umbrella of the philosophy and the ideology of minimalism. And I think it's not fair to let maybe one group of people or even one culture to define what that is. Like Jujet said, I think if we're looking across different cultures, minimalism would be applied very differently. Yeah. If you say you see what's happening in the US and how they sort of caught up in terms of the post-war consumerism, and other countries don't have that sort of timeline in history. So it would be very different for different countries. For me personally, though, like I think it's more of an ingrained reminder of the ideal lifestyle for me. So whenever I get the urge to buy something, this concept kicks in and it becomes sort of like a cognitive dissonance, like a little voice saying, do you even need that? Like, do you see yourself using that after 3 weeks? So when we let something into our life, I think it will also take up our time and attention. So there are infinite amount of materialistic things we could own, but the time and attention we have to use and enjoy them is finite. So minimalism, I think the concept really makes me think and choose more carefully what to let into my life, not just physical things, but even digital things to be more relevant of this age.
So what I'm hearing from you, Reef, is that by adopting a minimalist philosophy, you are setting boundaries on your time, your attention, and your energy. So let's talk a little bit more about that.
So one thing I'd like to share is this practice that I've been doing for many years. I think it does stem from this concept, minimalism, but the concept really came from Mark Zuckerberg. He only wears sort of like the same color shirt every day so that he doesn't really have to think about what to wear. And to me, that was really interesting because I realized I do have that problem of having a closet of clothes, but always going back to the same ones. And sometimes it's just straining to think about, oh, should I actually wear the rest of the clothes because I bought them? So I started just buying black and gray t-shirts, and I sort of gave away most of my other clothes, except for pajamas. And to me, it's very extreme for some of you, I believe. You know, I'm not saying that everyone should do this, but it's just that something, because of my job, you know, because I run a cafe, I don't have to go to the office, I don't have to attend meetings, like very formal ones. So I don't have to get all dressed up. So I can just wear a t-shirt and go to work every day, and I don't have to think about, is this what I want to wear today, for example, or is it time to get new clothes? Is this like the season already like outdated? Like it's not in trend anymore. Like t-shirts never go out of trends. So that problem is solved.
I see Georgette like nodding her head. Did you have a similar experience with this?
Yes.
Fashion choices?
Yes, I do. Back when I was still working as a journalist, I realized that we didn't always have to dress formally. So I figured out my uniform, which is black jeans and a black shirt. And I had 2-3 pairs of black jeans and maybe about 5-6 of the same black shirts. And in the beginning, of course, you thought, oh, it's a bit weird. But then after a while, you realize that nobody notices anyway. And it does cut the decision-making process down very quickly. So if you're not really concerned with being a walking fashion show every time you leave the house, which I'm not, I'm just interested in getting my work done. This is, I highly recommend trying this, especially if you are stressed out with, oh, what should I wear tomorrow? Oh, do I need to iron this? Okay, jeans, a black shirt that does not need ironing, and yes, and for the emergency formal event that you didn't see coming, keep a jacket in your car. So when you throw it over whatever you are wearing, you instantly look formal. That saved me a lot of grief.
I love that. It's really about choosing where you put your attention. And by reducing the number of clothes that you have and choosing a uniform, so to speak, you are freeing up so much more mental space and energy for other more important things. What other ways do you set boundaries on your time and your energy, Raven?
Well, I think, you know, I didn't save just that a few minutes of not thinking of what to wear just to waste it on social media. So I think I think it's one of my concerns right now. You know, one thing is social media buffet is so much out there, so much content that eats up a huge chunk of our time each day without us even noticing. And digital clutter as well can really slow down our productivity. So I think these two are the things that I'm really looking at the moment, like monitoring myself, not to say, oh, because I'm practicing one minimalist practice, I have to apply it to everything and you know, delete my account and only have a few files on my desktop. That's not really the case, but being aware that this could be a problem, I think it's also very important. Like now I think our phones have this function of showing us how much time we spent on our screen every day and specifically on which apps. And I think that's a very good starting point for us to measure and see how we actually use our time and energy. You know, if we're not paying attention to physical things that's around us, it doesn't mean we're free, like we're doing it right, because we could be wasting it digitally as well.
For our listeners, you would notice that we have moved from stuff to actually establishing that minimalism is about putting boundaries on our time, our attention, and your energy. So it's so much more than just stuff, or in this case, less stuff. Moving on, in today's world, it's obviously, it's so easy to buy stuff. The majority of us are so much wealthier than any generation before us. The desire and the ability to own more stuff, more expensive stuff, more, you know, more of the latest gadgets. It's come to the point where our possessions are starting to possess us and define our self-worth. How do you think that minimalism can counter this narrative? And is minimalism a new millennial concept?
First of all, I think we should start blaming the millennials for everything. Because news flash, the millennials are old as fuck now. Oh, that's the, I'm old, I manage one word. So, okay, I prefer to just call them the newer, the younger generation. So I see different types of people now. There are still people who are obviously holding on to expensive possessions to you know, to show their worth to the world. But there's also a group of people who are not interested in owning things because, you know, they are spending their money on traveling back when we could travel. So I think right now, a lot of the current generation are taking advantage of the fact that plane tickets were cheap and travel was accessible. And it was very easy to just jump into a plane on a long weekend and go somewhere. And because of that, that's where their money goes. They will think long and hard about buying a new car, because a new car means you can't travel anymore except where there are roads. Mm. And the other thing is that remote work is taking off. You get a lot of digital nomads these days. And what digital nomads tend to do is they will sell off nearly everything that they own. Some of them sell off everything. Some of them do not have a home to come back to tell the truth. They would just pick up everything and move into different countries every few months. So I know I have friends who do that. And you want to spend your money on things that allow you to live that kind of lifestyle. So a lot of these people tend to be very minimal about their possessions, because obviously you do not want to carry a giant screen TV with you when you every time you move countries.
That's interesting, because one of the things that attracted me to minimalism initially was that by freeing up my physical space, by having less things, I also at the same time freed up my resources, my money, so that I could spend those resources on things or rather in this case experiences like travel that added more value to my life. That was a choice that I was able to make by making a choice to not own so many things.
Yeah, exactly. Because look at it this way. You may want to buy a fancy car. Fine, if it makes you happy, but you have to think about paying installments, you have to think about maintenance, you have to think about so many things, insurance, and then it's just, you're just going to continuously spend your money on this one thing. If it's worth it to you, go ahead. But, you know, there's an opportunity cost that comes with that. It means that you may not have the money for other things in life that you may enjoy even more than owning this expensive thing.
So what we're saying is that when you spend money, you choose to spend money on something, it should be something that has value to you and you are able to, well, find joy in owning
spark joy.
Spark joy, something spark that's joy. Spark joy.
Yes, love absolutely.
That. Nothing wrong with owning something that you love, that genuinely brings joy to your life.
No, I definitely think that that's why I say I'm not telling you you are wrong for wanting to own a car. It's not what I would do because my priorities in life are different. Mm. So you should do things that, you know, makes the most sense to you, that brings you the most joy, because this world is not going to a very happy space. So whatever you can do to bring joy to your life, I will fully support it for you, although I might not do the same thing.
So the bottom line is that think about what you own, think about why you own that item, and not just mindlessly accumulate more and more stuff.
Yeah.
So Raven, I think you have a slightly different perspective on this.
No, I do agree on what you said. You know, it's just that if we come back to the concept of minimalism, I don't believe it's that new. I mean, it's new, but it's probably not exclusive to younger generations or millennials, so to speak. I believe one of the earliest minimalism concepts in Japan is called Dunshari. So it's like in Mandarin is Dunshari. Basically, it's a philosophy of reorganizing your life. It was advocated by this author called Deko Yamashita from Japan. Dunshari comprises of three things. One is to refuse. One is to stop, like to refuse clutter from re-entering your life. The second sha is to sort of like throw away, to let go, to give away. The is to stay away. So stay away from obsession of keeping unused things or buying more. So it's sort of like a detached from desire. So at first glance, you know, minimalism or this Dunshari, it seems to be a very simple idea, right? Just throwing out stuff and start buying more. Like, who doesn't know that? But on a deeper level, we would realize in our society, most of us, we just keep buying more and we just keep holding on to things. So I think on a deeper level, we really need to start reviewing the relationship between you and your possessions and rethink these relationships that can lead us beyond just physical objects, but make us think about what we really need in life. What are the things or even activities that actually brings meaning and purpose into our lives? I mean, if we let what we own define us, then it will never be enough, because physical things, they become stagnant in time, right? They don't grow or change over time like us. So we will just end up chasing after new things all the time. And we might never be truly happy because someone else is always going to have a faster car than us, a bigger house than us, or even a larger company than us. So we can't stop at the rat race if we have to keep going and chase after these things, thinking they're all we have to chase after in life.
I really resonate with the third theme, the detachment from the desire to own things. And I think that if that's your only takeaway from today's episode, that's going to be enough. It's rethinking the relationships that you have with the things that you own, and to think about what you really need in life and the things that generally bring meaning and purpose into your life. I really love that. Now, going back to what you said earlier, Georgette, about being brought up with a just-in-case mindset, you also talked about clutter and accumulating stuff. This is very dependent on what kind of background that you came from. Let's talk a bit more about that.
If you follow any of the decluttering or minimalism gurus, you'll notice that they don't just tell you to throw stuff away. And the reason that most of us end up with a whole bunch of clutter, or, you know, even worse, full-blown hoarding, is because of something that's very internal. It goes back to the way you were raised and how you were taught to attach value to your belongings or to specific items. When I mentioned the just-in-case mindset, that was the one that I grew up with. Every time I would look at this thing and go, yeah, I should probably, what am I going to do with this? Should I just keep it? Should I throw it away? And one of my parents would tell me, yeah, just keep it just in case. And, you know, when I was younger, I didn't really question that, because in a way it kind of made sense. You know, what if 20 years later I'll need this old SPM paper again? I don't know why, but, you know, but just in case we need it, I'll have it somewhere. Mm. So you know, it's a mindset that you learn from your parents, and it's a mindset that they probably learn from their parents. So if you go back fine enough, you're going to find the post-war generation where things are very hard to find. And when you do find them, it's very expensive and you might not be able to afford it. But if you somehow were able to to get hold of it, the only way you're going to let it go again is, you know, by prying it from my cold, dead hands. And the only person allowed to pry it from my cold, dead hands are my children. Because you just end up, a lot of times you just end up passing it on. I mean, if you look into families, you're going to find items that are lying around that came from your grandparents and nobody knows what to do with it. Because to get rid of it, it's like, oh, the sentimental value, it used to belong to grandma and grandma is no longer here and this is the only thing we have left to remind us of her. That keeps a lot of people holding to a lot of stuff. But let me give you an example that we all can relate to. I'm pretty sure that most of us have a box or a drawer full of wire and cables, and you don't know who these cables belong to. You don't know which device.
Guilty.
Yeah, same. You don't know which device this plugs into. And, and sometimes, on a rare occasion, it does pay off. You put them together again because you find that device and you find yourself needing to use that device, and oh, the just in case pays off. But a lot of times it doesn't. So if you do not know where this wire goes and your wire is already growing fungus, true story. So it's either you don't have the item anymore, or you have not used it for so long that, you know, it's probably not going to matter anymore. This is how being afraid that you don't have the thing several years down the line when you need it, this is where it comes from. This is why we hold on to a lot of useless things.
I think that's such an important point for you to bring up. One of the arguments that I hear for not being a minimalist is it's very hard to be a minimalist if you live with other people who don't practice the same lifestyle, who don't subscribe to the same philosophy. But I think it really helps to understand that our relationship with things, with possessions, is a lot more complex than owning them. We attach some meaning to these things. We attach some sentimental value to these things. And definitely it helps for you to understand. But my parents are definitely not minimalist. They keep everything, and I mean everything. I definitely get irritated because of the clutter that I think they hold on to. But it makes sense to think about why they hold on to stuff. Because they grew up poor. They grew up with this scarcity mindset and this fear of not having enough. So it's important for us to understand where our parents or people like our parents come from. What are some of the challenges that both of you have faced in practicing a minimalist lifestyle? Obviously, it isn't that easy, because if it were, everyone on the planet would be doing it, right? So what are the challenges that you personally have faced?
Well, I think it's easy to get excited at first. You know, it's easy to start throwing away things and organizing and cutting down. It's just like screen cleaning. But to keep it for a period of time, to keep at it, like to make it a habit, to make it a lifestyle, I think it's a real challenge. Like the perseverance and consistency for me would be the biggest challenge, I would say. Another thing is, you know, when you live with others, I totally agree. You can't really, I mean, if you're a perfectionist, then I think it'll be very challenging for you, because you might be all organized and stuff, but your family member or those who live with you start to, you know, lay this stuff all over, and they're not organizing the things according to ideal. So I think it's really to strike a balance and just to know that I still have control over my thing. So I don't really have to beat myself up for the people I live with or for stopping halfway, because life is life. Things just happen, and, you know, it's okay that you bought a new TV. I don't know, like, it's okay that you bought something new. It's not the end of the world. Yeah, I think what really helps me all the time is also to overcome these challenges is when I travel, right? All I have is my luggage and things I bring along. And sometimes I'll be gone for more than a month or even 3 months, and I'll be okay. I I have all the stuff left behind, stuff obviously I don't need to keep myself alive, you know, even in a foreign country. That concept, like this always helps me to think that, you know, it's never too late to pick up somewhere, even if we stop halfway or life happens.
That actually occurred to me during this one time when I was traveling and I was away for quite a while. And it also occurred to me that, yeah, I don't miss a single thing about all the other things that I own back home. I could just live out of this suitcase and I'm fine, because the things that you just realize that when you're away from all your belongings, they ultimately don't actually matter that much. And then so it just, you know, that's a really fantastic way to get you thinking about, why do I keep these things around?
In a way, both of you felt liberated.
I guess maybe. So yeah, I wouldn't say liberated, because that's a bit exaggerating for me. It's probably a realization that there's nothing we can't live without. I would say. Yeah.
What about you, Georgette? What are the challenges, some of the challenges that you have encountered?
So some of the challenges about trying to live a minimalist lifestyle, in the beginning, it was just trying to get started, because I like to do my research, and then, you know, you get wrapped up in all the research, but you don't do any practice. So getting started was a problem. But Raven is right. Being consistent about it is pretty difficult to do. Yes, you get excited about it, but then you just fall into this rut where, okay, you know what? If I don't put that thing back, I'm not gonna, you know, nothing's gonna happen. The thing is just gonna be there out of place. And before you know it, another item will join it. And then before you know it, another item will join it. And you're just back to where you started. And then at that point, you're gonna have to start the process all over again. I just want to highlight the point that just because I'm here talking about minimalism doesn't mean I'm the perfect minimalist, because
me neither.
Yeah, because it's going to be an ongoing practice. So I think the important thing is that you are aware that the concept exists and people are doing it, and there's nothing wrong about trying to do it. But like everything, it is a struggle. It's like going on a diet, you see, you get into it very inspired because you're going to drop a few pounds and fit into that nice outfit. But then after that, you know, you either lose steam, or once you've achieved that short-term goal, you kind of give up already. So making it a habit is definitely challenging.
Welcome back to Mindbrew Chats and this episode on minimalism and mental health. In the first half hour, we talked about minimalism as rethinking our relationship, the things that we own. We also went a bit deeper and talked about intention, specifically living life with intention. So Georgette, earlier on when we were chatting, you mentioned something very powerful about intentional living. Could you tell our listeners a bit more about that?
So sure, living intentionally is a phrase that motivational speakers probably like to throw around a lot, but it's not as easy as it sounds. You know, on living intentionally, we have to remember that most people don't. Intention requires us to be present. And it's hard to be present when most of your attention is being taken up by unavoidable things, like a hectic job or dependents who need your attention. What people like me end up doing is we fall into a survival mode or a coping mode. So just, you know, for today, the only thing I need to do is to finish this thing, meet the deadline, and after that, I'll be too exhausted to do anything else. So that's not really living intentionally. That is just living by the seat of your pants, which is nowhere as romantic as it sounds. It is very, very stressful, and it really leaves you no time and no energy for anything else. Because, you know, after a day like that, the last thing I'll be thinking about is, oh, I should be eating healthily, or I should put this thing away, or I should do my laundry. Doesn't happen.
You know, this reminds me of something that you wrote before about wanting to live a zero waste sustainable lifestyle. Now, people do that with the best of intentions, right? They want to save the planet. But what happens is that you spend so much time and energy deciding what can be recycled, what can be composted, what can be donated or reused, and what needs to be thrown away. It takes up so much space, not just mental space, also, well, physical space. And it's space that you don't necessarily have to spare. And this ties in with what we're talking about right now. Living with intention is not easy, and it's even harder when your life is filled with a lot of other commitments and obligations and dependents that take priority over wanting to live in a certain way.
Oh my God, yeah. You know, you start with the best intentions. You want to live a zero waste life. You want to recycle. You want to do all the right things. But you also forget the part where you actually have to, you know, clean out things, clean out plastic things that you want to recycle somewhere. You have to make sure that the thing you want to recycle is in the condition that the recycling center would accept. And it takes up time, and it's also going to take up time for you to actually put all that thing in your car and go find a recycling center. So this is where I fail, and this is where my house starts looking like a junkyard. Totally happened.
It ties into what we were talking about earlier. Both Raven and yourself mentioned that minimalism as a lifestyle is not something that is defined or should be defined by a particular class of people, or, you know, by a very rigid and prescriptive rule book. It is something that we adapt according to what we are able to cope with.
Mm-hmm. And right? I find that I was not able to cope with that.
And it's perfectly okay, because that's you. To someone else, it may mean something different. They may be able to somehow adapt it to fit their lifestyle and the time and energy that they have. And that's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. That is true. So, you know, when something doesn't work, when the most obvious solution doesn't work, you just have to find some other way to get around it. So if you do not want to keep dealing with trying to recycle plastic, just don't bring any more plastic into the house. It's just that simple. Okay, it's not that simple, but the answer is very obvious. It's still not that simple, but it's an answer.
I really like what you said earlier. Intention requires us to be present, and it's hard to be present when most of your attention is tied up elsewhere. That actually reminds me of the practice of mindfulness, which is similar to, but not quite the same as, meditation. Now, mindfulness is the practice of focusing your thoughts on the present moment, on what you are feeling, experiencing right now, and nothing else. The premise for mindfulness as something that improves mental health, decreases stress, regulates emotions and such, is that a lot of us, I would say that almost all of us have cluttered minds. We have so much internal clutter inside of us. This existential clutter, this spiritual clutter, this mental clutter, whether it be our own or the opinions from other people. Now, Raven, I know that you've practiced meditation and mindfulness for a number of years now. How would you link your practice of minimalism to mental health?
So I think Georgette mentioned living intentionally, and she said, obviously, it's easier said than done. In mindfulness practice, like, you know, like a minimalist, we want to try not to focus on so many things, because things will just happen in life and it can be very overwhelming. What minimalism, the concept, there's a similarity that I find in mindfulness, is to sort of let go. Well, if you can't let go, just let everything else happen and just focus on one thing. And to start, focus on your breath without all the physical things or everything else, or even digital things, or what's happening in our mentality or our mind. What's there is our breath since day one. And we are usually on autopilot and we don't really notice our breath. We don't really pay attention, or let's say we don't breathe intentionally, right? So I think the link between minimalism and mindfulness and mental health, I think I can definitely see a link, because minimalism is said to help a lot of people to declutter not only physical things. Well, when you do declutter physical things, automatically all the other departments gets the same effect. You just get this mental clarity, because you're left with only the things that are essential and that are important to you. And another thing that I think mindfulness can be brought into minimalism when you try to practice is that the idea of being present, like Georgette mentioned earlier. So if you practice mindfulness enough, it's easier for us to bring our awareness to the present, you know, because it's like just an exercise, right? Focusing on the breath, and then the mind will fly somewhere else. You know, what did I have for dinner? What am I going to eat tomorrow? You know, oh, I should have done this at work. And that's okay. The point is, when you notice that your mind is doing that, you bring it back to the breath. This practice, if you do it often enough, you sort of harness this ability to be in the present, to bring your awareness to the present. And that is very helpful when you want to decide what is essential, what brings meaning into your life, what sparks joy. When you have to choose between a room full of things, or what can be recycled, what can be given away, what needs to be thrown out. Mindfulness would really help if you can just be present and focus on one thing at a time.
What I've been hearing from both of you so far is that practicing minimalism is part of practicing self-care and caring for your mental health. Is that correct?
Sure. There are many forms of self-care, so minimalism can be one of it. So I think Rafe mentioned a little earlier that when you practice minimalism on one aspect of your life, let's say with your belongings, the act would carry over to everywhere else in every other part of your life. The way I would word it is that, you know, removing physical clutter from your living space can be a form of self-care, but you have to know why you are doing it. And, you know, when you know why, you're going to start to ask yourself, what other parts of my life can I apply this to? But first and foremost, if you are going through something and there are certain things in life that no amount of self-care is going to solve. So if you really are going through something serious, the last thing I'm going to tell you is to throw out half of your house to feel better.
We have to make it very, very clear to our listeners. We are not saying that minimalism is the solution to all your problems. It is not. If you're going through acute mental distress, or if you're living with a chronic mental health condition like depression, anxiety, or whatever it is, getting rid of all your physical stuff, your physical clutter, is not going to be a cure. But when you embrace the practice of minimalism, decluttering things that you don't need, learning to live with less, and living with intention, that can be part of your self-care toolbox. It can be part of your mental health kit. And when you practice it consistently, it will contribute towards better mental health and well-being. Because like both Raven and Georgette have mentioned earlier, by practicing the act of minimalism, of decluttering your physical clutter, you free up your time and your energy for things that are more important, like your relationship with yourself or the relationship you have with people around you. Now, going back to Raven, what's your take on your practice of minimalism as it relates to self-care?
This reminds me of my experience in the meditation retreat that lasted for 10 days. Because it's a retreat and we can't bring in many things. We can't bring books. We can't bring our phones, obviously. No devices to write. Nothing to read. We live and we eat and we wear very simple things. We eat simple foods for 10 days. And all we do is meditate, sleep, and eat. And that experience was really, I would say, really made a remarkable impression, I think, on me. Because of that experience, I know that I will be okay, even if one day I'm just living frugally, even if I don't have all the things that I have, I can still find peace and I can still take care of myself. And in fact, I spend more time with myself, right? Because you're not, your attention is not being hijacked by your phone or by an email or by work or even by your family members, like with your kids, for example. I had myself fully to myself during those 10 days. And yeah, I think part of me still really wants to go back there because there's nothing else like an absolute peace of mind, you know, without the noise, without other demands of daily lives. So I think if we do practice minimalism in our daily life, we are somehow creating that sort of environment for ourselves as well, right? We're stripping away the unimportant things or things that we think are important, but they're really just munching away on our health or on our emotions. Yeah, it's good to always have that in mind. Like if you have that experience, you know that, oh, maybe I'm so stressed now, it's time for an audit of my life. You know, I need to audit my life to really see, can I live without this? Or will I actually be a better self without this even?
Was this also a silent retreat, Raven?
Oh, yes, it was. So, yeah, so we're giving up a lot of things. You know, we're giving up. Yeah, even speech and not even eye contact. I mean, there are obviously other people at the retreat, but you don't talk to them. You don't make contact with them. Everyone is just in their own world, fighting their own battle.
I must say that I feel very conflicted after hearing about this experience of yours. I'm attracted by it because I want that serenity and that peace of mind that comes from blocking out all external stimuli and being just with yourself and your own thoughts. But at the same time, I'm terrified. And the thing is, it's not the lack of interaction or having to be silent that scares me. It's not having my stuff with me, not even a pen, a notebook, or music to listen to. I don't think I could do it.
There's no escape from yourself.
Yeah, so basically you just have you and your mind. But that is the point. I mean, the reason why we go into these retreats is because the environment forces us into a certain state, which otherwise would be impossible if we're, you know, back home with all of our stuff, with all of the people around us. It would be impossible. So minimalism is somewhat creating, also like changing the environment, right? Like within our capability.
Yeah.
So starting from that, we create a condition for ourselves that is more likely to help us into finding inner peace, to finding what's truly valuable to us.
So far, we have been talking about minimalism and our relationship to things or possessions. Let's talk about relationships now. Minimalism as it relates to our relationships with other people. The Minimalist podcast, they have this thing called minimal maxims. And one of the things is you can't change the people around you, but you can change the people around you. So what are your thoughts on this?
I love it. It's such a clever, I mean, as a writer, it is such a clever little line. And it's true, you can't change the people around you, but you can decide whether you still want to hang out with them or not.
Well, there's a lot that's been said about decluttering physical possessions from our life. Now, how does this apply to people, to relationships? We all have people in our life who are maybe not so healthy for us in the sense that they are maybe very negative. They can't be happy for our success. They gaslight us. I'm going to stop short of calling them toxic, but what do we do with people like that in our lives? let's say you have this minimalism mindset and you are focusing on bringing people and things and keeping them in your life with intention. So what do you do with these people? Do you cut them out of your life or do you just spend less time with them?
Well, personally, this probably has nothing to do with minimalists, but to come to the conclusion that someone is toxic for you, someone in your life or someone even you cannot cut out is toxic for you, is a very heavy label, I would say, because I think relationship is hardly one-sided, right? So I believe a so-called toxic relationship is somewhat created by everyone who are in the relationship, if you get what I mean. So even though if you see yourself as a victim of a relationship that you call toxic and you sort of define the cause of that relationship being toxic, being the other party, right? And saying, okay, because that person is toxic and that is why, you know, I'm in this toxic relationship. But I think the problem lies there, because I think the relationship will just continue to become toxic if you keep thinking the other person is toxic and you need to get rid of the other person. And if it doesn't, like, if it's not possible, then the only way is to communicate with the person, right? But if you communicate with the person, it's very difficult to get a head start with the label in mind that he is toxic, he or she is toxic. So I think in a way, we need to audit also our labels about people. And these labels may be very difficult to get rid of because we would have so much evidence that that person is toxic. You know, even physical evidence, maybe you have a scar or you have something physical, you know, resulted from a violent incident with that person. But still, you know, does that really prove the other person toxic? It's still a label, right? And what I'm saying is, if we don't audit our labels about people, it's very difficult to come to terms with them. And I believe even if we want to say goodbye to someone in our life, you know, maybe we had a very significant relationship, it's always good to end it on good terms as well. So instead of I'm cutting you out forever because you're toxic, and we could change it to more like, okay, because, you know, I have these needs to live my life in this way, and this is ideal for me, and you're really not fulfilling those needs. So I feel like I really need to end this, or I need to live on my own, for example, or whatever solution that you find and you've made a decision on, and you can let the other person know. But if you go in and say, you are toxic, goodbye, then you'll probably just forever remember that person that way. And you will remember what you have, whatever memory you have shared together as toxic. And I think, you know, that is also something we don't really need to keep in life, because without all the physical things or whatever, what we have are memories, right? And it's also important for us to do an audit on our memories. You know, how we remember someone or how we remember a movie, right? So the ending of a movie is always what we tend to keep in our memories.
Wow, that's beautiful. I really like how you said that when the physical things are gone, all that you have left are memories. The shared experiences between you and the person who is now gone from your life. I fully agree with everything that you just said. Labeling someone or a relationship as toxic is not something to be done lightly or without good reason. When a friendship or a relationship ends, you do want the ending to be good. Because if it isn't, it can eat at you for a lifetime. Now, bringing things down a notch, let's move away from the subject of toxic relationships and focus more on minimalism as it relates to curating the quality of our relationships with other people. Again, focusing on the theme of living with intention. What are your thoughts on curating your circle of friends? Now, this sounds a lot worse than it actually is. What I really want to say is, what are your thoughts on cultivating deeper, more meaningful relationships, but with a smaller circle of friends, as opposed to distributing your time and your energy amongst a wider circle of acquaintances and possibly seeing less meaningful relationships with these people?
That actually reminds me of this article that once said that you can only have meaningful relationships or friendships with an X amount of people, so there's no point in having 1,000 friends on your Facebook profile. But it's not really that clear cut. I mean, when you're talking about, I don't know how other people.
I think that's called a Dunbar number.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like a cognitive limit to the number of people with one, like we can actually like
actually have
physically
the time and energy for.
Yeah.
Which is fair, but it's like, it just brings me back to primary school where you have your BFFs and everybody else is not allowed in. And, you know, as adults, it's like relationships I find are very fluid. Like I can't even give you a number, to be honest. I mean, I do have a circle of close friends. I do have a circle of very close friends. And then I have a wider circle of, you know, the casual friends and the acquaintances, which I do have some kind of relationship with to a certain extent. But I don't say, hey, Laura, I'm not going to be talking to you for the next X months because I want to get to know Raven better. I mean, I don't do this to people because there are occasions when you find a shared interest or you find a shared situation that's going to bring you closer to a certain someone that you may already have somewhere within your friendship circles. And sometimes it happens with the most unexpected people. So I don't say, yeah, I only have vacancy for 5 close friends this year. And, you know, if any of them leave, I can promote somebody. Doesn't happen to me because, you know, it's a very, you have friends for different reasons, okay? I mean, let's say Raven has a dog. I have a dog. We can geek out over dogs and we can become good friends over that, you see. But if you remove the dogs from the equation altogether, we probably wouldn't have anything to talk about. But it doesn't mean that, oh, you don't have a dog, bye. I'm not talking to you. So it just comes down to circumstances. It comes down to where you are in life, where the other person is in life. If you are in school, for example, you may have this circle of friends. But when you leave school, you find that you have absolutely zero in common, although you used to be so close in school. It's the same with being in workplaces. You are very close with certain colleagues, but the moment you leave the job, it's like you have nothing in common anymore. So it's not something that I'm going to dwell on. I mean, I'm not going to like audit you out of my life just because our lives are very different now. But I am definitely going to always have a close relationships with people I have the most common ground with at any given moment. And I know people who do hold on to the concept of best friends forever very seriously, and I'm not one of these people.
We've been using very harsh terms like cutting someone out of your life, ending relationships. But we need to go back and remember the essence of what we're talking about today. Minimalism is living life with intention, right? So when this comes to relationships, for me personally, I find that I'm not able to invest the same amount of time and energy into many different relationships. And by invest, I mean I truly care about everything that's going on in your life. I care about your mental health. I care about your family. I care about your successes and failures. If I invested that sort of energy into all my friendships, I would burn out really, really fast. And the quality of my friendships, I find, would suffer. For my other friends, it doesn't mean that I don't care about you. We've had shared experiences. We have shared memories. We've worked together, studied together. Maybe some of us knew each other as children. Doesn't mean that I don't care about you, but I cannot invest the same amount of energy into our friendship as I do with my closer friends. And that's what it is to me.
Yeah, and sometimes the feeling isn't mutual, which is where the problem starts. And you are going to have friends who are going to be very, very offended that you are not spending the same amount of time they are spending on you. So that's a situation that you're definitely going to have to navigate or figure out how you want to deal with it.
Definitely, definitely. Georgette, earlier on, you mentioned something about evaluating or reviewing people's roles in your life. And this is part of how you practice minimalism in terms of your relationships.
Yeah. Rafe is going to hate me, but I do cut people out of my life.
Well, I'm not going to hate you.
I will call them toxic and I will cut them out of my life. But, you know, having said that, I don't use that label very lightly. You know, I have experienced quite a lot of, I have put up with quite a lot of really bad treatment from certain friends or certain relationships. And sometimes you just hold on to them because that's all you know. You have no idea that there's something much better outside of that. That was a lesson that I really carry with me. So I'm always evaluating the role of other people in my life. And if there's something about you that, you know, makes me feel a bit weird or makes me feel uncomfortable, or the way you are treating me is just a bit strange, or the way that I see you treat other people is just does not agree with me, sometimes I might bring it up, but sometimes I won't. Actually, a lot of times I won't. I hate confrontation, so it's very unlikely that I'm gonna confront you about something unless it's of immediate danger to somebody else or to yourself. Sometimes I'm just gonna go, okay, I see that this is your personality and I see that I'm the only one who has a problem with it. So I'm just going to probably minimize the amount of time I spend with you, because what I'm seeing is just causing me a lot of anxiety and grief, and this is not healthy for me. So this is a way of protecting myself. It is also true that some of these people would be your own family members, which is kind of awful, but happens more than you think. And you can't cut off your siblings or your parents. Best thing you can do about it is just to set some boundaries.
It really is all about setting boundaries. Rather than saying that we're cutting people off, we are talking about being clear about the boundaries that you set for yourself and for other people. What is acceptable behavior and what is not? And how much are you willing to let these people affect you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Minimalism is about intention, right? We've been talking about this all this while. But it's really also about setting personal boundaries. Boundaries that give us agency over our own physical space, our body, our time, our energy, and how we feel, our feelings.
Yeah. And, you know, if you think about it, it's much easier to decide to stop seeing people than to set boundaries. Because, you know, you can afford to cut people out of your life, your problem kind of ends over there. But with people that you cannot remove from your life because they're family or they're dependents, that you're definitely going to have to set boundaries. Like, and you're definitely going to decide how you want to react to things that you're not happy about, where there are attempts to get past your boundaries. And a lot of these people are going to accuse you of being selfish because, okay, you know, you can't do this for me. You are a terrible family member and you're just being selfish. And the people who call you selfish are the people who benefit from you when you cannot say no. And you only have this much energy or this much resources for them when they're not coming for you like that. And, you know, and when they are doing this kind of thing to you, they're trying to make you feel guilty for not bending over backwards for them. You just have to decide how you're going to deal with that. You're just going to decide where you are going to put your foot down. And that is it. You are my parent, or you are my sibling. You are my family member. I love you, but I'm not going to allow you to make me feel like this. You cannot control what people say or do to you, but you can still decide how you want to react with it. So sometimes it is not taking it personally or not losing any sleep over it. And you also have to remember how people treat you is a reflection of them, not of you.
That's correct. How people treat you is a reflection of them, not of you. That's important for us to remember. Raven, what about you in terms of relationships? How do you manage, you know, your relationships in terms of fitting into this minimalist philosophy?
Hearing all that, I think, you know, I'm probably the more fortunate one, which I wouldn't see it this way before, because the way I was brought up, I left home quite early. And I didn't really stay in one place growing up. So how should I say this? Like, I don't really have a number of close friends that I grew up with, something like that. Or even my parents. I don't think I'm very... I didn't cut them out of my life, but we basically don't live together, so I hardly see them. Yeah, so I would say most of my relationships are sort of managed digitally. The people I see physically are very limited, actually, due to, you know, my lifestyle right now. And I totally agree on, you know, setting boundaries and or leaving. Like, I don't think there's a problem of leaving or not having someone in your life. That's perfectly fine. It's just coming to terms to know that what my needs are and whoever that I'm leaving are not fulfilling those needs, and as simple as that. So I don't really have to remember them as, you know, selfish or violent or toxic. So that's really where I'm coming from. But I totally understand that we're taught to give those labels. It's to protect ourselves in some circumstances. And also it's the way we learn about this world growing up. We're taught so many adjectives. We're taught so many labels. Good and bad, you know, about people. What I wanted to address is basically just being aware how many people we actually do label toxic in our life, and we never really go back to review how did that come about. And sometimes what's sad is we might be physically absent from those people that we had labeled bad for us. They somehow still exist in our mental realm. So, you know, we might have nightmares. Or even sometimes we just go into a sort of trance and start remembering these things and start having these negative emotions. So I believe we can definitely leave someone or even cut out someone. For me, that actually happens naturally. Like, I don't have to intentionally go and cut someone out because, you know, like I said, if I just stop messaging someone or, you know, sometimes that just happens naturally. Even friends that I've had in different cities I've lived in, if we come in contact again, like even after years of not talking to each other, we can still be friends. Like if we're really friends, right, there's no problem of, you know, not contacting. And then suddenly when we contact again, there's a lot to catch up, and that's fine, right? Like we will not hold a grudge for, okay, not staying in touch or whatever. No, just because it's easier to stay in touch nowadays doesn't mean we have to, right? But I wouldn't say, okay, this person is now out of my life and this person is now in my life. Like, it just happens naturally. But I'm not saying that you shouldn't manage your people so-called actively. I'm not saying that. you know, everyone has their own way of living or managing their social life. But yeah, so what I'm really saying is just be mindful of how we end a relationship.
I think for me, one of the ways that I have chosen to manage my relationship with the people around me, which has also caused some people to be upset at me, is my refusal to join WhatsApp group chats unless it is absolutely necessary. For me, it takes a lot of time and energy. I don't like the clutter of having to read through messages that I'm not interested in. Obviously, I am in there's a family chat group, then there are various work groups, various friend groups. But one of the ways that I conserve my mental space is to remove myself from WhatsApp groups that don't spark joy.
I really admire that, to be honest, because that's a superpower that you have and I don't. I'm in a ton of these, you know, unnecessary groups.
I have offended people. People ask, why? Why are you so difficult? Why do you not, you know? Well, if it's really that important, just call me. So to listeners out there, the people that know me, I don't mean it personally. I just don't want to be in your WhatsApp chat group. All right? So moving on. We're reaching towards the end of our episode today. And one thing that is foremost in our minds, I think, we're living in the pandemic of our lives. How has the COVID-19 pandemic affected your minimalist lifestyle?
Well, stuff doesn't leave the house. I've ordered more things from Shopee during the pandemic than I've ever done in my entire life.
As has most other people on the planet.
Yeah. And there are, you know, for a while, there were boxes and packaging material everywhere. I've moved them out of my living space now. It was getting ridiculous. And on top of that, the isolation has made me very listless. Okay, first off, when MCO started, a lot of people said this thing to me that really pissed me off. They said, oh, but you're an introvert. I bet you're loving this. No. First of all, if you say stuff like that, you have no idea what an introvert is. And, you know, yes, an introvert likes their quiet time, likes being alone every now and then. But you have to bear in mind a couple of things. We don't always like being alone. It is not about social anxiety. I still have friends. I still do things that have gotten me accused of being an extrovert before. And you also have to remember that you are stuck in a house with other people and you cannot get away from them, which is one of the worst things about the pandemic. So what happens is that it just drains me out of a lot of my energy, and I am not being too hard on myself about the amount of stuff that's piling up in my room. So as long as I can still lie down in bed, it's like, I'm good. I mean, I can always deal with the clutter when we can actually take things out to donate or give away to people again. So remember, decluttering is an ongoing process. It is, you know, once you learn about it, it's probably going to be something that you're going to be doing for your entire life. So don't sweat it if you can't do it everything right now.
What about you, Raven?
Well, like I said, I don't think I can call myself a minimalist yet, you know. And depending on how you see it. For me, it's really not that big of a change. I mean, I imagine at certain points that I would have all this time, you know, being in the house. So in fact, I can do more audits, you know, of my stuff. I mean, I did do some, but definitely not as much as I expected. So I do buy stuff online, but only because when I need them. So and things that I cannot get locally, I would buy online. Otherwise, shipping is not something that I look forward to. Yeah, I guess it's when we always complain about not having enough time. You know, if you think this is a big project and you need a lot of time every day to go through your cupboards, to go through your wardrobe and stuff, just to clean up and declutter, that's not really the case, because, you know, I had all the time in the world and I didn't do it. So it's not about how much time you have. It's more about whether you can make it a habit. If you could just review one thing per day, do it for 30 days, and that's 30 things, right? So I guess to start small, that's fine. And not thinking just because, you know, okay, now I'm at home and I'm going to flip the whole house over and and change everything, you know. And sometimes that would be too big of a project in your mind and you would never get started.
So Raven's advice for anyone who wants to begin on this journey of a minimalist life is actually just to start with the small things.
Yeah. Basically, just start.
What about you, Georgette? What's your advice for someone who's been listening to this and like, you know, this sounds really good. I think I'm going to give it a try. What's your advice?
Wow. What is my advice? Just get started and, you know, tweak it along the way.
To wrap up our episode for today, if you had to explain what minimalism is to someone with a very short attention span, what would you say?
And make room for the important things in your life.
I like that. Raven?
Well, when you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to a million other things. So choose wisely.
I know I said at the beginning of this episode that I wasn't a minimalist. But after listening to everything that we've discussed, I think that I've at least been practicing some of the principles of minimalism. Living with intention, living with clarity, living with simplicity. Now, we've got a whole list of resources compiled by our guests, which I will put in the show notes. This includes links to blogs, documentaries, books, and other resources. I would like to thank both our guests, Raven and Georgette, for making it to the show. Thank you so much for saying yes. Now, Georgette has her own podcast as well, and she is a talented writer who also writes poetry. Can you tell us where we can find some of your work?
So I am on most social media platforms under my name, Georgette Tan. But I do want to mention that I just released my poetry chapbook in digital format. So I will provide a link for Laura to add in the show notes so that if you're interested in checking out some of my poetry, you could probably go have a look. And I do a little podcast called Jet Into It, where I talk about things that I am into. I have made it in 2 episodes because I got distracted when I joined another podcast. And I started working for that one instead. But I will be getting back on my own podcast sometime soon in the next couple of months. My links will be all provided. You can go check it out if you want to drop by and stalk me.
Thank you, Georgia. I love the name of your podcast, by the way. It's so simple, but it's so smart. Jet with it.
Jet into it.
Raven, what about yourself? Where can we find you?
Well, I don't run a podcast, but I do run a cafe.
Which is excellent coffee, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's called Earthlings Coffee Workshop. And like I mentioned earlier, I was inspired by many minimalistic cafe designs when I was designing this cafe. And also, we wanted to just focus on specialty coffee. So we don't have a lot of food and other stuff in. That I guess that's also a very minimalist approach. So you can check us out on our website, earthlings-coffee.com or Earthlings Coffee on Instagram or Facebook. If you want to find me on my personal Instagram, it's Ravenew. I think it's easier if you see it in text later.
It'll be in the show notes.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Laura.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both of you once again. I hope that our listeners out there have a better understanding of what minimalism is now, beyond physical decluttering, and how it can positively impact your mental health. Don't forget to follow our social media platforms on Instagram and Facebook at MindBrewKCH. That's MindBrewKCH. We'll see you again on our next episode. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.